Welcome to WHRO's Weekly Edition. I'm Jordan Christie.
And I'm Barry Graham.
We highlight the week's news and stories happening all over Hampton Roads. There's a fresh slate of stories for you in this week's program. Ever wondered what happens to all the debris on construction sites? Well, rubble from the HRBT project is being repurposed to create artificial reefs in the Chesapeake Bay.
We're lowering the cost of construction, but we're also having a net positive impact on the biodiversity out here in the bay.
Consumer advocates are urging regulators to heavily scrutinize the nearly $70 billion deal struck between Dominion Energy and NextEra Energy in May.
And waterborne drones that swim or float are playing a major role in modern warfare. The Pentagon plans to spend billions on the burgeoning technology. It's WHRO's Weekly Edition. Virginia's Opioid Abatement Authority announced more than $35 million to address the opioid crisis. WHRO's I Ching Wang says some of that funding in Hampton Roads will go to prevention and outreach programs.
Officials say outreach is especially important as fentanyl is increasingly mixed into other drugs. One example is Virginia Beach's teen-to-teen social media campaign and outreach initiative. Kate Meekin with the city says the program targets high school students with information about opioids, fentanyl, and naloxone.
We wanted to take advantage of that platform and work with the students in Virginia Beach to educate them on all of these things. And then they served as ambassadors, talking about it through their own social media platforms to spread the word, educate others, influence others within their social circle.
The program received more than $270,000, one of the larger Hampton Roads single locality allocations. Yi Ching Wang, WHRO News.
Old Dominion University's new institute will connect the college business and government organizations. WHRO's Ashley White reports it's all part of a unified effort to support national security.
ODU has worked with the Department of Defense and other national security-related agencies and companies sharing its research and solutions. It's why the college felt it was the right time to launch its National Security Institute, said Vice President for Research and Economic Development, Kenneth Fridley.
This is not suddenly something new at ODU. This is actually a recognition over our many years of dedication to serving the national security interests of our country.
The Institute brings together ODU's more than 30 research centers to share expertise, capabilities, and facilities to address the evolving national security landscape, Fridley said. It will study how systems behave when faced with physical and cyber threats. A national search is underway for the Institute's executive director. Ashley White, WHRO News.
Thousands of tons of bridge material will be dismantled as part of the Hampton Roads Bridge Tunnel expansion. WHRO's Catherine Hafner reports what's happening with all that rubble.
The $4 billion project includes building two new tunnels and bridges that will double the number of lanes to ease traffic. That means the old ones are coming down.
Once we have all traffic shifted onto our new bridge here, it's going to be a full go on demolition activities.
That's project manager Ryan Bannis. He says the rubble includes bridge decks, beams, and pilings. It's all going onto state-run artificial reefs out in the Chesapeake Bay. The material gets loaded on a barge, taken offshore, and lowered by a crane onto the bay bottom. It's like a very heavy game of Tetris. Bannis says it's also cheaper than other disposal methods.
We're lowering the cost of construction, but we're also having a net positive impact on the biodiversity out here in the bay.
Marine life like flounder and black sea bass flock to the underwater concrete jungle. Catherine Hafner, WHRO News.
60% of new mothers stop breastfeeding before they intended. A Fluvanna County woman invented a wearable device that assesses breast milk quantity, composition, and a baby's latch to help them troubleshoot problems and breastfeed longer and with confidence. Christine Cuter from partner station WVTF tells us more.
That's the sound Jenny Lynn Walden's newborn daughter made for nearly 2 months straight. Walden, who wanted to exclusively breastfeed her child, just couldn't console her.
There's so many different types of cries. I've heard some babies that are just like, wah, wah. I'm like, oh, they're good. Her cry was heart-wrenching and just like gut-twisting.
Worse, Walding's daughter didn't gain weight. Doctors called it failure to thrive and told Walding to track feedings and weigh the baby before and after nursing, which she dutifully did. She also used a breast pump and silicone nipple shields to improve the baby's latch. That's the way a child's mouth is positioned to effectively transfer milk, neither of which helped.
She's falling off of her growth curve, and she is not intaking. And what does that mean? Like, where is that coming from? Is that a mom problem, which is what a lot of people want to make you believe, because we're not really in the business of blaming babies, but they're their own human and they bring their own challenges as well.
Walding developed mastitis, blisters, and bruises on her breasts. By the time a doctor identified and treated her daughter's tongue tie 7 weeks later, that's a congenital condition that reduces the tongue's range of motion, a battered Walding had an epiphany.
I kept looking at this nipple shield and I was just like, This is dumb. I love to hate it. I hate to love it. Why am I not getting more insight?
Walding, who'd worked in marketing, searched patent libraries for devices that measured breast milk output, assessed a baby's latch, and evaluated milk composition. Nothing did all those things.
We say, you know what? The gold standard for infant feeding is breastfeeding. Breast is best. Breast is best. We drill that into our moms. And yet we don't offer support, we don't offer research, or I should say limited research, we don't offer solutions.
About 84% of new moms initiate breastfeeding, but only about 1 in 4 babies is exclusively breastfed for the first 6 months, as recommended by the American Academy of Pediatrics. 3/5 of American women stop breastfeeding before they intend to, due to pain, fatigue, and milk supply concerns. Nearly 1/4 of newborns get formula in their first 2 days of life.
That's our angle, is capturing the duality of breastfeeding. So the milk transfer, so from breast into baby's mouth, how much milk is flowing, and because we are a dual-sided sensor, and we also believe and know that babies bring their own challenges to breastfeeding, what's going on in their mouth? Because we need to remove the subjectivity from the space of infant feeding.
To date, Walding's earned $75,000 in grants, which helped her apply for 2 patents, create models, and develop and refine the tech. Now she's pitching hard for what she hopes comes next.
So bring them out.
A working prototype and clinical trials. For that, she needs $1.5 million. But Walding's not deterred. She thinks her company could birth $350 million.
The fact that a creature's sole sustenance is coming from your body is, it's a huge undertaking, but it's also, there's a lot of power in that. So if we sit and think about the value of human milk, I mean, it literally is like gold. And that's why I need the moms, I need the researchers, I need the investors. Like, if there is a takeaway, is human milk will set us free. I really believe that.
Once mass-produced, the smart nipple shield, called MilkMaid, would cost $350 and include a 6-month subscription to the breastfeeding app. Reporting from Lake Monticello, I'm Christine Cuter.
Still ahead on Weekly Edition, the Virginia Department of Education wants to focus on improving safety and community partnerships for public school districts. But first, in May, Richmond-based Dominion Energy proposed a $67 billion merger with NextEra Energy, headquartered in Florida.
The mega deal proposal has consumer advocates urging regulators to look closely.
The Virginia Center for Investigative Journalism at WHRO's Elizabeth McGowan reports.
The merger would create a company that serves 10 million electric and gas customers in Virginia, Florida, and the Carolinas. Virginia utility watchdogs say a regulatory review could take up to 2 years. The time frame allows federal and state regulators to rigorously evaluate whether the merger benefits customers, not just shareholders. Brennan Gilmore, executive director of Charlottesville-based Clean Virginia, says the sole standard for measuring success is if the merger improves the lives of Virginians by lowering electric bills. Clean energy advocates say one way to get cheaper and more reliable energy is to add more sources of solar power onto the grid. Elizabeth McGowan, WHRO News.
Congressman Bobby Scott delivered $850,000 in federal funding this week to upgrade Norfolk's primary emergency homeless shelter. WHRO's Brian Saunders says the money will be used for more than just maintenance improvements.
Located on Tidewater Drive, the center used to be an Econo Lodge motel. The money will build a kitchen on site. Executive Director Nathan Woodard says the federal investment completely shifts how they manage their food service.
Right now, we are paying approximately $600,000 a year to outsource a kitchen that we have different private providers bring in meals to us.
Woodard says the project is currently in the design phase and construction will take 12 to 18 months to fully complete. The facility improvements will also help the center expand job training and recovery support. Brian Saunders, WHRO News.
James City County's new consolidated government center is going to be a reality after the Board of Supervisors narrowly approved construction on Tuesday. WHRO's Nick McNamara gives us the latest.
The center is going to cost $179 million, not including interest, furniture, or the cost of a 25,000-square-foot library addition. The project's helped fuel building fatigue for many residents worried about the price tag and how it will add to the county's debt. County staff, however, contend it can handle the cost and that a new center is necessary to serve the growing population. A 2020 study reported the workforce had already outgrown the space at its current complex. The construction timeline now gives the county about 2 years to plan for what to do with the campus on Mounts Bay Road. Administrators are talking with the school division and other groups about possibly taking it over. Nick McNamara, WHRO News.
After hearing from people across Virginia, the state superintendent of schools said her department will focus on what families are concerned about: safety, quality instruction, and community partnerships. WHRO's Ashley White breaks down how the state plans to make that focus a reality.
Superintendent Jenna Conway, who was appointed by the governor in January, spent the first few months on a listening tour that started in Hampton Roads. More than 2,000 people offered their feedback. The takeaways, Conway said, were focused on key issues, including ensuring schools are safe, strengthening literacy and math instruction, and working with community partners to create opportunities for students. Conway, who has a passion for early childhood education, said she sees how partnerships and support from birth to graduation make a difference in Hampton Roads.
It truly is the village to educate the kids and to be kind of aware of the needs of the parents and that workforce is what really makes that area of the state so special.
Ashley White, WHRO News.
Drones are playing a major part in modern warfare, and that includes waterborne drones that swim or float instead of fly.
One of them came to the aid of a U.S. Army helicopter that crashed near the Strait of Hormuz earlier this month.
As WHRO's Steve Walsh reports for the American Homefront Project, the Pentagon plans to spend billions developing and deploying unmanned sea vessels.
The crew of a downed Army Apache helicopter was rescued by a Navy waterborne drone off the coast of Oman. It's the first time an unmanned vessel has been used to rescue troops, says Brian Clark, who works on Navy policy at the Hudson Institute.
It's faster than waiting for the search and rescue helicopter to come out and find you. And they were able to basically take that unmanned vehicle and get them to a safer spot. And then the helicopter could pick them up and take them home.
Clark says the Navy has been using this type of drone mainly for surveillance since the start of the war with Iran. Built by a Texas company, Saronic, they're 24 feet long and look a bit like a small fishing boat without seats. He says the Navy has been funding prototypes for years, even as it focused most of its resources on large warships.
Until maybe 2 years ago, I questioned the Navy's commitment because there just wasn't that much money going into them. And they'd done a lot of experimentation and prototypes and demonstrations, and they really hadn't translated that into vehicles that were being bought at any scale.
Then in late 2023, Houthi rebels used both air and water-based drones against the U.S. in the Red Sea. The defense budget now includes billions for acquisition. To speed up the process, the Navy is setting up a marketplace for companies to sell their drones directly to the military and other potential federal buyers after the Navy approves their designs. Fairlead is a shipbuilder and repair company in Portsmouth, Virginia. They've focused most of their efforts into building components for big Navy warships. Fred Pasquin shows off sections of the flight deck of the future USS Enterprise, which are being welded at one of their shops.
This is more of the panel getting assembled, and there's a little over 1,000 of these that make up an aircraft there.
Fairlead is also building parts for a Columbia-class submarine. Business is booming, but with the Navy's emphasis on drones, the company is trying to get into the new marketplace. They are working with the defense contractor Sierra Nevada Corp to build drones that will be roughly 50 feet long. Fairlead Vice President Todd Babcock says the Navy wants companies that can produce a lot of vessels quickly.
Can they build them? Can they scale? Can they do it quickly? Those that can do that will play out favorably. I think it all comes down to, are you a boutique provider? Or are you really a legitimate contender in the unmanned market?
The Navy is looking for designs that can do things like locate mines, interfere with incoming fire, or essentially be waterborne guided missiles. Many are small enough to be loaded onto containers and sent on Navy ships. The Marines are interested in an unmanned boat that can deliver supplies to the beach under fire, Clark says. Large shipbuilders have limited capacity. They strain to deliver carriers and submarines on time. But he says capacity isn't an issue for the smaller drone market.
The U.S. is the largest boat building industry in the world, and that's a great opportunity. You can go to these boat builders when you need a bunch of vessels built and build them, and then those builders can go back to building commercial vessels when they're done.
The Navy is testing prototypes for the first 7 bidders and hopes to have a list of winners by September. If that goes well, Clark says, other companies like Fairlead will get a chance to compete for the Navy's business. In Norfolk, Virginia, I'm Steve Walsh.
Williamsburg ceremonially kicked off construction for its African American Heritage Trail. WHRO's Nick McNamara was there and delivers a timeline for the project.
City Manager Michelle DeWitt says the trail is a commitment to telling a fuller story of Williamsburg, the breadth of which Johnette Weaver, a local historian, didn't know when she was growing up in predominantly black neighborhoods in the city. Weaver says her granddaughter, Emma, will.
I grew up riding my bike out of that neighborhood that was all black into the historic area, going up and down the streets, being told sometimes by visitors to the town that I didn't really belong over there. And now, there's a trail that tells the story.
The Heritage Trail was introduced about 6 years ago. It will stretch 2 miles through downtown, with markers at a dozen stops highlighting important places, people, and moments for the black community. Planning began in earnest in 2023. It was once intended to open on Juneteenth. Williamsburg now expects it to be finished by the end of the year. Nick McNamara, WHRO News.
July 4th is just around the corner, and that means a lot of booze. To combat some potentially risky behavior, the 757 Sober Ride program will make sure people get home safely after celebrating. WHRO's Toby Cox has more on the program.
Marianne Raymond with Drive Safe Hampton Roads says it can be difficult for people to recognize their limit when drinking, but getting it wrong puts lives at risk.
If you start to feel a little tipsy, you're probably there. If you feel it, you probably are it.
Raymond advises picking a designated driver ahead of time. But if that doesn't pan out, there's the 757 Sober Ride Program, which will run July 3rd through July 6th. People can request a ride at 757soberride.com. Rides are provided through Lyft and are free up to $15. The program has provided more than 5,500 sober rides since starting in 2022. Toby Cox, WHRO News.
An all-volunteer crew in Augusta County runs an organization that rehabilitates injured bats, nurses orphaned pups, and teaches the public how to protect these furry flying mammals. WMRA's Randy B. Hagee reports from the Shenandoah Valley.
In a small building behind Leslie Sturgis's house, the Bat Conservation and Rescue of Virginia team are busy feeding orphans milk replacer and conducting health checks.
With bats, according to the literature, they have to hit 85% forearm length compared to adults before they can really start flying.
Sturgis, a former zookeeper and park naturalist, is the organization's founder and president. She notes the progress of one big brown bat pup. Its pointed, fuzzy snout and a delicate little wing peek out of the gloved hand of a volunteer.
So still not at flying size yet, but getting there, and that's why we really want to encourage them to flap their wings, because that exercises the very important pectoral muscles and shoulder girdle if you're a bat.
Incubators line one wall for the youngest babies. Another room houses older pups and nursing mothers in soft crates, including one eastern red bat, maybe 4 inches long, that just gave birth 3 days before.
So you can see she's much lighter colored.
Yeah, like a strawberry blonde.
Yeah, and she's much fluffier because this is a tree bat. They live out in the foliage.
She was found, pregnant and grounded, with a minor wound on her wrist that prevented her from flying, earning her a stay at the rescue. Sturgis picks her up gently in a towel to see how many babies she has nestled on her abdomen.
Let me see your belly. I know, bitey bite. Ah, there are indeed 3. See them? 1, 2, 3. They're just packed in there. Little baby bat sardines. Sorry, Mom.
A third room contains a tall mesh enclosure where bigger juveniles practice climbing and flapping their wings. Kavya Parsa, a long-term volunteer, has one of the adolescents hanging on their hand with a mealworm in its mouth.
That's tucking. So in flight, they'll catch a bug in the air and then they'll tuck it into the tail and catch it. So that's a good practice technique. Wow. What a big bat.
Brooklyn Richardson is a North Carolina A&T student interning here and at the Wildlife Center of Virginia in Waynesboro.
I come in and I do the dailies, and a lot of that is just cleaning up after the bats and also checking in on all the bats that are here. So checking in that they're good, no injuries, you know, nothing out of the normal.
The rescue takes calls from all over the state from people who have found injured or ailing bats.
Can you return it to the colony if there is one? But we can also go by body condition. Like if it's really thin, then nobody's been feeding it for a while, so mom's probably been predated, often by an outdoor cat.
They also regularly care for bats that were caught on glue traps. They just received 5 juveniles who survived after being freed from the glue, but their mother died. The biggest threat to Virginia bats over the last 18 years has been white nose syndrome, which is caused by a fungus that infects cave hibernating bats. The fungus was first seen in New York in 2006 and is still moving westward across the U.S. In some sites, it's killed 90 to 100% of the bats there. Some species have weathered it better than others.
Like gray bats and big brown bats that don't seem to be that impacted by it. But then some of our other bats, like a tricolored bat and little browns, Indiana bats, they've been impacted by white nose. But they seem as though they're starting to make a turn, or at least they're leveling out.
It's possible the ones that have survived have some genetic immunity to the fungus. Reynolds said researchers have also seen resilient bats putting on more weight going into hibernation. Outside of the rescue is a gazebo-shaped flight cage, with wooden shelters hanging along the walls and pool noodle obstacles dangling from the ceiling. Parsa and summer assistant Nathaniel Newsom hold up fabric barriers to encourage the bats to fly and be observed in the daytime. One fully grown bat clings to the fabric, shivering as she wakes up.
You can see she's actually much more engaged in what's going on around her now. She's echolocating. Ooh, that was good.
Oh my God.
She flew off and immediately crawled into a roost where Parsa retrieved her.
I know. I am so mean and evil.
Yeah, so now she's fully awake and she's giving that as a
an alarm
from me.
Vocalization. Yeah.
Once they can fly with stamina and agility and take off from the ground, they're ready to be released and return to their rightful place eating insects on the landscape. Sturgis and Reynolds said we can all help bats by educating ourselves, planting native flora, not using pesticides, and turning off our lights at night. I'm Randy B. Hagee.
You've been listening to WHRO's Weekly Edition.
We had help today from WHRO's Toby Cox, Catherine Hafner, Nick McNamara, Brian Saunders, Steve Walsh, Yiching Wang, and Ashley White.
VCIJ's Elizabeth McGowan, WVTF's Christine Cooter, and WMRA's Randy B. Hagee. Also, Connor Worley, who produced today's show. A reminder that you can always catch full episodes on the Weekly Edition podcast feed.
You can get your news updates at WHRO.org and the WHRO Reports podcast feed.
For all of us at WHRO and WHRV, I'm Barry Graham.
And I'm Jordan Christie. Have a great weekend.